Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. Tonight's episode will feature heavily on the NBA Finals and pretty much all things NBA, as we are coming to the close of the NBA playoffs. We'll get to see how the final series between the Los Angeles Lakers and Miami Heat is going, and all things score updates, player talk, and much more. I'm excited to get started, so let's get right into it. After what has been a very exciting and unique postseason inside the NBA bubble in Orlando, the 2020 Finals is well underway. And after four games, the Los Angeles Lakers hold a 3-1 lead after winning Game 4 against the Miami Heat on Tuesday night. The Lakers sealed their spot after ousting the Denver Nuggets in Game 5 and ending Denver's two-series streak of recovering from 3-1 deficits. LeBron James has now qualified for the finals 9 of the last 10 seasons, while Anthony Davis, who has been spectacular all postseason, is getting his first finals taste. Meanwhile, the Heat took down the Boston Celtics in 6 games to win the Eastern Conference crown. 22 teams entered the bubble, and now only 2 remain. With so much exciting action already occurring, one can't help but get excited about what the rest of the season, about what the rest of the postseason will have in store. LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers take 3-1 NBA Finals lead. These three sequences show how close Miami was trying to tie the series. The Miami Heat fell to the Los Angeles Lakers 102-96 in Game 4 of the NBA Finals on Tuesday, and now trail in the series 3-1, but it was not for lack of effort. Miami played its proverbial heart out. They were masterful defensively, from both an effort and execution standpoint. The Heat battled LeBron James and Anthony Davis pre-catch and doubled hard, and sometimes late, after the catch. They recovered from those doubles and challenged shots. They stayed in front of the penetrators for the most part, and they communicated on switches and held their own on the boards, despite some timely offensive rebounds and second and third chance points for the Lakers that were pretty deflating. Offensively, the Heat just didn't shoot it well enough from beyond the arc, and they were 11 for 32. Once the Lakers started going under on Jimmy Butler ball screens, the Heat had a lot of difficulty getting into the paint with enough leverage to create kick-out shot opportunities, and Davis, in addition to taking the one-on-one challenge of guarding Jimmy Butler, protected the rim like a maniac when Miami did get in there. Ultimately, the Heat were swimming upstream most of the second half and just ran out of breath. A valiant effort, no question, though. That said, there are no moral victories in the NBA Finals, and Miami had this game in its sights. A coach will always tell you a loss never comes down to one play or one possession, or even a few plays or possessions, but that's not exactly true. Yes, there's a lot that happens over a 48-minute basketball game, a lot of which we just discussed in the first 3 paragraphs. But the bottom line is, after all the dust settles, the margin in so many of these games is razor thin. A couple points here or there can be, and often is, the difference. In Game 4, there were 3 sequences in particular that swung the wrong direction for the Heat, who might well have been in a position to win this game and tie the series had these few seconds literally gone differently. Number 1. End of third quarter disaster. Miami had the ball, down by 3, with the shot clock off, as the third quarter wound down. In this situation, above else, you make certain you take the last shot. If you connect on the shot, you'll be down 1 or tied. If you miss, you go into the fourth quarter, at worst, still down 3. Either way, the Lakers should not get another chance to score, under any circumstances, before the third quarter buzzer sounds. Instead, that happened. So let's go over this. Rather than bleeding the clock down, the Heat are pressing their luck from the start of this possession, passing the ball over the court, risking a turnover or a wild shot. Perhaps that can be justified by the fact that they did, for a moment, have a 5-on-4 advantage while Anthony Davis lagged behind after falling on his previous shot attempt. But once nothing materialized, Miami should have pulled the ball out and taken the last shot. Instead, Hero came off sprinting off a screen and fired up a tough contested three-pointer with 8 seconds still on the clock. Hero missed, and then Bam Adebayo went recklessly crashing into Davis, trying to get an offensive rebound he was never going to get. Anthony Davis then got knocked to the ground. The Lakers are in the bonus, and then Davis makes the 2 free throws, and suddenly, Miami goes from being tied, if that, Hero shot goes down and being down 5 entering the fourth quarter. That is a huge swing, particularly at the juncture of the game. Number 2, Kelly Olynyk bailout foul. The following describes and shows what was, arguably, the Lakers' worst offensive possession of the game, and they came out of it with 3 points. First, Kendrick Nunn cuts off Rajon Rondo's drive, then Jimmy Butler cuts off LeBron, forcing a pass out from the baseline. Alex Caruso catches it and goes into a pick and roll, which Miami easily controls, and Caruso's pass bounces off Markieff Morris. The shot clock is now winding down, and Morris has to go into a one-on-one pull-up three-pointer with less than 3 seconds on the shot clock. It is an incredibly low percentage shot, and if Olynyk doesn't take the bait on a desperate pump fake and bail Morris out by fouling him on a three-point attempt, I'd be surprised. You can see the time and score, and we're under 10 minutes to play, and the Heat likely go from down 1. As Morris probably misses that shot to down 4 when he sinks all 3 free throws. Don't get me started on what a bogus rule this is that a shooter can completely manipulate his motion to jump into the defender and get rewarded for it. But these are the rules. Olynyk knows the rules, and this was a major blunder, and another crucial 3-point swing. Number 3. Butler misses, KCP makes. Nobody did anything wrong in this final sequence, but it was a giant swing no less. You hear the phrase, make or miss league, and this is what it means. On one end, the Heat are down 2 and have a shot to take the lead on a Butler 3-pointer with 3 minutes to play. Butler misses, and on the other hand, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope hits a 3-pointer from the corner to put the Lakers up 4. You can see the Lakers conceding that shot to Butler, whose inability to shoot from 3-point distance, for as great as he's playing, is becoming a problem as this series goes on. But Butler senses this is a pivotal moment for Miami, and he's right. So he goes against his normal shot discipline, or hesitancy, if you prefer that classification, and fires the 3-pointer. And if he makes it, the Heat take the lead with 3 minutes to play. And this is a very different ball game down the stretch. Instead, he misses. KCP hits, and we go from Miami up 1 to down 5. That's another 6-point swing. Run the numbers on the first 2 sequences, the end of third quarter swing, and the Olynyk foul. And the Lakers gained, at a minimum, 5 points that they absolutely should not have scored. This final sequence was another 6-point swing in the Lakers' direction. All told, that's an 11-point swing. The Heat lost by 6. You should do the math. Let's take a quick break before we are back with more of the NBA and the NBA Finals on Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. And we're back with more talk about the NBA Finals on Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. The Lakers versus Heat. Anthony Davis's spectacular bounce back game 4 performance goes well beyond the box score. You don't want to catch Anthony Davis after a bad game, that's for sure. following one of the worst performances of his playoff career in a Game 3 NBA Finals loss to the Miami Heat, Anthony Davis was incredible in a 102-96 Game 4 win on Tuesday, which left the Los Angeles Lakers 1-1 away from the most unique NBA title in history. The performance continued a troublesome tradition for the Lakers' opponents, where Davis quickly brushes off bad games to greatly impact the next. In the Lakers' first game of the NBA restart, Davis was held to 14 points on 2-of-7 shooting in a loss to the Toronto Raptors. The next game, he torched the Utah Jazz for 42 points and 12 rebounds. A week later, he put up 3-for-14, 8-point dud against the Indiana Pacers, which, at the time, exacerbated the chatter that the Lakers weren't the same team we saw before the hiatus. He followed that up with 27 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks in a win over the Denver Nuggets to close out the seeding schedule. We don't have any recent postseason examples because, frankly, Davis hadn't had a bad game in the playoffs until Game 3, but those wondering how he would react in an NBA Finals setting received their answer on Tuesday. If you missed the game and just saw the stat line, 22 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, you might think that Davis had another subpar performance compared to his lofty standards. But that couldn't be further from the truth, as Davis was essential to a Lakers win that hinged on a few key possessions on both ends of the court. LeBron James stressed that the importance of Game 4 in a text to teammates before the game, but there was no rah-rah speech from Lakers coach Frank Vogel uttered in Davis's direction following his rough Game 3. He knew his star would show up when they needed him. "You don't have to say anything to Anthony Davis. He wants us more than anything," Vogel said after Game 4. "Obviously, he is a great player, capable of imposing his will on the game on both ends of the floor. You saw what he did tonight defensively, and obviously that big three helped seal it, but was great on both ends all night." Let's start with defense, where Davis was an absolute menace from the opening tip. He's such a talented offensive player that we sometimes forget that Davis is arguably the best defensive player in the NBA, and the depth and versatility of his ability were impossible to ignore in Game 4. In addition to having to contend with the return of Bam Adebayo, Davis started off the night by guarding Jimmy Butler, fresh off of one of the best offensive finals playoff performances we've ever seen. Davis helped set the defensive tone in the Heat's first non-transition possession of the game, using his length to take away Butler's passing lanes, then offering timely help on Duncan Robinson that led to a shot clock violation. Butler finished with 22 points and shot just 3-for-12 from 3, with 3 turnovers after the first quarter. Davis also registered 4 huge blocks, coming from behind to take away layups for Kelly Olynyk and Kendrick Nunn. And throughout the night, he frightened Heat drivers who occasionally passed up point-blank opportunities at the rim because Davis was in the vicinity. Miami fans were likely frustrated that players were kicking out from under the hoop, but those looks aren't as open as they seem when Davis is lurking. Anthony Davis fought through Robinson's screen to recover and forced Jimmy Butler to nearly turn the ball over, trying to kick it out to the corner rather than challenging Davis. "We hold each other to a standard that no one else can hold us to, and that's what it's all about. He challenged me every night. I challenge him every night. Doesn't matter if the ball is going in," LeBron James said of Anthony Davis after Game 4. "We have to do things to help our team win, defensive end and offensive end. He did that tonight. He was spectacular, taking the challenge on Jimmy Butler to start, and then any time he got switched onto a guard, just containing them, getting blocked shots, giving us extra possessions offensively. As opposed to game three, when he seemed utterly confounded and frustrated by the way Miami Heat was defending him, Anthony Davis was much more poised and patient offensively on Tuesday, taking what the defense gave him early without forcing the issue. Just before the end of the first half, Anthony Davis passed up a good look at a deep three-pointer and instead dribbled into the post where he drew three defenders. He kept his composure and fired a perfect cross-court pass to Alex Caruso, who buried the three. Anthony Davis got more aggressive in the second half when he scored 14 of his 22 points and earned all four of his free throw attempts. And then, of course, there was the dagger three-pointer that gave the Lakers an insurmountable three-possession lead with just under 40 seconds left to play. The ecstatic reaction from both Davis and James shows how big the shot was emotionally for a team looking to put away an opponent with a penchant for late comebacks. While his game-winning buzzer beater in the Western Conference Finals against the Denver Nuggets helped win that series for the Lakers, this shot puts Davis one step closer to his first NBA title, which they'll get their first crack at in Friday's Game 5. But don't let the big shot overshadow what Davis did all night. His play on both ends won the game for the Lakers, even if he didn't put up the gaudy numbers that we're accustomed to seeing. It was one of his best games of the playoffs, even more impressive since it immediately followed one of his worst. We feel like we got bullied in Game 3. We feel like we got outworked. They were more scrappier than us, and we didn't really like that. We saw it on film. They were doing whatever they wanted, especially Jimmy Butler, Davis said after Game 4. Like I said, we didn't like it, so we wanted to come out to be demanding on the defensive end, demanding on the offensive end, playing with great battle on the floor. Loose balls, talking, being scrappy, we were able to do that tonight. And if we play like that every game, you know, especially next game, we're going to become champions. Heat versus Lakers, thrilling Tyler Hero experience on display in finals from pure frustration to unbridled joy. Nobody goes home raving about riding the teacups. Instead, you're telling your friends about Space Mountain or Splash Mountain, describing the twists and drops when your heart raced and your palms went sweaty. It's fitting that the NBA Finals are taking place less than 2 miles from Disney World, at a time when most of us can't or aren't willing to go to an actual amusement park. All we have to do is watch Tyler Hero play basketball to ride the most thrilling roller coaster in the league. In the NBA restart, the baby-faced 20-year-old Miami Heat rookie has shot, dribbled, and snarled his way into the national spotlight, most recently in the NBA Finals against the Los Angeles Lakers. After a promising rookie season in which he averaged 13.5 points and 14.1 rebounds on 38.9% three-point shooting, Tyler Hero has gone from a nice rotation piece to an essential cog in the Heat's offensive attack this postseason. He's scored in double figures in all 19 of his postseason games and planted his flag in the terrain of budding NBA stars with a 37-point gem in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Boston Celtics. He's averaging 16.6 points, 5.4 rebounds, and 3.7 assists in his first playoff run, and has already set the NBA record for most three-pointers made by a rookie in a single postseason. Hero has the swagger, he has the look, and he has the game to back it up. He's going to continue to get better, Heat All-Star Jimmy Butler said of Hero. Obviously, he's a rookie, but I tell you, whenever he's out there on the floor, the swag that he plays with, the moves that he makes, you'd think he's been in the league for 10 years plus. Let's take a quick break until we'll be back with more on Tyler Hero and the NBA on Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. And we're back with more talk about Tyler Hero and the NBA on Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. Let's get back to Tyler Herro talk. For every jaw-dropping playoff moment that Tyler Herro has produced, there's a confoundingly frustrating instance of equal measure. Herro sometimes takes shots that make you wonder if he even sees the defenders, and when he makes them, it's breathtaking. When he misses them, however, you're left shaking your head in disbelief. Never was this phenomenon on better display than in the Heat's 102-96 Game 4 loss to the Lakers on Tuesday night. Overall, Herro played well, as he has since joining the starting lineup in place of the injured Goran Dragic in Game 2, but his great plays were offset by numerous head scratchers. Buckle up, and please keep your arms and legs inside the vehicle at all times. Herro's first points of the game came on this beautiful one-handed reverse layup after blowing by Anthony Davis on the baseline. The level of difficulty of this shot is off the charts, having to manipulate the ball with his offhand and put the perfect English on it, all while making sure he doesn't get stuffed by arguably the best rim protector in the NBA. And just minutes later, we see the opposite side of that coin. Herro gets out in transition and tries a similar tactic against Davis, this time just using his right hand, and it doesn't go quite as well. Hero's shot selection must be maddening at times for Heat coach Eric Spoelstra. He pulls up for a three-pointer on a 1-2 fast break, which isn't a thing, with 21 seconds on the shot clock and all of his teammates behind him, including two still in the backcourt. He has a confidence, he has a fearlessness that is uncommon, Spoelstra said of his basketball prodigy, but he's humble enough to work and to be coachable, to take the mentorship from the veteran players that we have on our team. And he just continues to gain more confidence as we go. Herro's confidence allows him to make shots that others might not even consider shooting. He's made 9 out of 15 field goals and gone 4-for-4 on three-pointers with a very tight defender with 0-2 feet, according to NBA.com. The 60% field goal mark puts him second behind James Harden among guards with at least 15 such attempts in the postseason. We saw a perfect example in a 4-point game in the fourth quarter of Game 4, when Herro sniffed out the most minuscule fraction of airspace and launched a rainbow 3-pointer over LeBron James, hitting absolutely nothing but net. LeBron was close to blocking this and potentially creating a fast break opportunity for the Lakers at a crucial juncture of the game. And then, of course, there was this absolute ridiculousness, a floater over Davis that nearly went into orbit before returning to the Earth's atmosphere and rattling through the rim. In a 3-point game in the fourth quarter, Herro tried a similar shot over a much smaller target, Alex Caruso, but took an extra step and was called for traveling. Up and down we go. As is so often the case with talented young players, Herro is clearly still figuring out how to best harness all of his ability. He takes difficult shots because he knows he can make difficult shots. And Spoelstra has continually raved about Hero's ability to create late clock offense out of nothing, a particularly necessary skill against playoff defenses. As he begins to eliminate some of the rookie mistakes, Herro's ceiling will only continue to rise, and will be entertained every step of the way. Tyler's gotta be Tyler. At the end of the day, we don't want him to be anything different than what he wants to be as a player in this league, Heat forward Bam Adebayo said. He's got to score the ball, he has to make passes, and we expect that from him. He's like 19 or 20. He's a rookie in the finals. So it's fast-paced, and he's trying to figure it out, and I feel like he's figuring it out, and he's getting better. Here we got Danny Green's invisible value. how the third highest paid Laker has impacted NBA Finals amid a shooting slump. Death, taxes, and Danny Green shooting slumps. They are the three inevitables of life, and for the glass half full crowd, they come with more optimistic opposites. Death is only the end result of life. The more you make, the more you're taxed. And Green's slumps only stick out because his hot streaks are so blistering. Toronto's championship run was the perfect example. Green went 4-for-23 from behind the arc in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then started the NBA Finals 11-of-22, and all was forgiven. Green's shot comes and goes. It hasn't in the bubble. Green is sitting at 33% for the postseason, and with only one game remaining before a potential championship, it's looking like his typical eruption isn't coming. Yet, Frank Vogel hasn't taken him out of the starting lineup even once. Neither did Nick Nurse a year ago, or Greg Popovich in any of his last six postseason runs in San Antonio. Some of that is trust. Some of it is blind hope of regression. But mostly, three of the best coaches in the NBA have all come to the same correct conclusion. Danny Green still impacts games positively, even when his shot isn't falling. The numbers bear that out for the Lakers. They have outscored opponents by 148 points in Green's 476 playoff minutes and have been outscored by 14 in the 436 minutes he sat out. The obvious explanation for this is that he is still an excellent defensive player, independent of his own shooting. Yet most of this gap comes on offense. The Lakers are scoring 121.5 points per 100 possessions with Green on the floor in the postseason and 107.5 without him. Lakers fans frustrated with his nearly $15 million salary have run through the entire laundry list of possible excuses for that, from he still has gravity even when his shots aren't falling to he plays most of his minutes with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, to it's just blind shooting luck in his lineups. But the far simpler answer here is that Green is just an enormously intelligent basketball player. Basketball IQ tends to be ascribed to ball handlers. It's way easy to watch Rajon Rondo dissect a defense in pick and roll and marvel at his brilliance. But the label shouldn't be so limited. Shooting, in Green's case, is the byproduct of the dozens of little things that make him such a special role player, whether or not those shots go in. Game 4 of the NBA Finals provided a number of worthwhile examples. Selling the screen. LeBron is one of the NBA's preeminent switch hunters, and Duncan Robinson has been his prey of choice in the finals. The method is simple. Whoever Robinson is guarding screens for LeBron, which forces Robinson to switch onto LeBron. Miami's defense is so concerned with mitigating the damage of such a switch that they lost track of the simplest switch-busting tactic in basketball. Slipping. A lazy slip is a predictable slip, but nothing about Green's acting job here is lazy. He comes from the opposite corner, seemingly to screen for James, and sells the idea of that screen to Robinson masterfully with a quick, tiny little jump stop in front of Jimmy Butler. Robinson switches, but immediately following that stop, he continues in the corner before making serious contact with Butler. Butler, therefore, doesn't register the switch, and Green gets a wide-open three-pointer from the corner. Green punished the Heat for their expectations, goading Robinson into a switch that wasn't necessary in order to free himself for easy points. Most players slip too early. Some players oversell the screen. But nuance is Green's specialty, and he isn't the sole beneficiary of those veteran tricks. Let's take one last quick break before we're back on more of Danny Green and the NBA on Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. And we're back with the last segment on tonight's episode of Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. Let's get back to Danny Green and the NBA and just what's been going on in that realm. Peekaboo and the art of off-ball movement. Danny Green spends a lot of his time in the corner. Many role players do. He starts his play, like most others, waiting there for the action to potentially reach him. Eventually, it does. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope runs a loop around the court, and Bam Adebayo chases him. But watch what happens when Caldwell-Pope gets to the baseline. Green quickly shuffles out of the corner and behind Tyler Hero, obstructing Adebayo's vision of him. He then immediately pops back out from behind Hero once Caldwell-Pope has passed for a surprise screen on Adebayo, which takes him off of Caldwell-Pope. It's the role player equivalent of White Goodman's patented peekaboo attack, but its impact is much subtler. The hard screens forces Adebayo off of Caldwell-Pope and into the corner on Green. Despite his efforts, that functionally takes Miami's best defender out of the play, which turns into a dunk for Davis that he couldn't contest because of Green's gravity. Green quietly punked Adebayo again a bit later, and just as before, the move was subtle. Bam winds up in the corner on Green, and as Davis drives, Green gives Adebayo a nice little tap on the back as if to say, "Don't worry, big fella, I'm right here. You can leave me alone," and creep towards the basket. It buys him a split second of freedom to launch the three. Adebayo was a second team all defense forward this season, and few wings have gotten the better of him. Green did in the second quarter of game four through little more than a veteran Gill. He has plenty of that on defense as well. His lightning-quick, ambidextrous hands. Green revealed in an interview during his rookie year that he is ambidextrous, but nobody paid it much attention because he barely dribbles. Where it has come into play, though, is on defense. Green is not just comfortable swiping with the other hand, but can do so at almost any angle. One of his Game 4 steals came as he chased Hero, reached around his body, and poked the ball out from behind with his right hand for the two easiest points of the night. He nearly came up with another steal from behind, this time with his left hand, while side shuffling over a screen. Green has a lot of step with age, and a hip injury has nagged him during the postseason, but he remains a valuable defender in large part because of how he can use his length. Green tied for the Laker lead in deflections per game during the regular season, and even if he gets beaten off of the dribble more than he's used to, he still affects jump shooters even after chasing them around the court. It speaks to one of Green's best traits, something that has shown up in all of these clips: his spatial awareness. Green uses and manipulates his position on the court as well as practically any off-ball defender in basketball, and he does it on both sides of the ball. It is part of what sets him apart from his more traditional 3-and-D contemporaries. He doesn't need to hit his threes to provide value. In a sense, that could be viewed as the mantra for the entire Laker team. They're about to win a championship in the highest volume three-point shooting season of all time, despite taking the 23rd most three-pointers per game in basketball. Their stars drive that contrarian approach, but their role players support it, perhaps none more so than Green, the shooter that doesn't need to shoot. And lastly, we got NBA free agency in 2020. Here's a list of free agents for every team and how they might affect off-season roster construction. The two best teams may be focused on the NBA Finals right now, but the other 28 have turned their attention toward the off-season. While a schedule, a salary cap, and a plan for next season are still getting sorted out, we can say that at some point in the fairly near future, free agency will begin and players will be able to move as they see fit. But who is on the market, and what kinds of teams might be able to pursue them? Below is a list of every team's free agents this offseason and a brief look at how they might choose to go about building their rosters in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Before we get started, a few brief notes. The assumption for now is that next season's cap numbers will be identical to this season. That means a cap of $109.14 million, a luxury tax line of $132.6 million, and an apron of $138.9 million. And all these numbers are subject to change. Some sort of cap compromise between the players and owners is forthcoming. This is just the likeliest one. While there are minor technical differences between team options and fully non-guaranteed contracts, they are considered identical for our purposes. The differences, in most cases, don't warrant exploration. Here's a couple teams and their potential draft picks and free agencies. The Atlanta Hawks. Unrestricted free agents, Jeff Teague, Vince Carter, who's retiring, Trayvon Graham. And restricted free agents include Scal Labissiere, Damian Jones, DeAndre Bembry, Charlie Brown Jr. Atlanta can control the board in free agency. With virtually limitless cap space and no major pieces to re-sign, look for the Hawks to use their space aggressively. The Boston Celtics. They don't have any unrestricted free agents, but they do have restricted free agents that include Brad Wanamaker, Tremont Waters, and Taco Fall. Should Hayward opt in, Boston will start the offseason in luxury tax territory thanks to Jaylen Brown's extension and their cavalcade of draft picks. The Brooklyn Nets. They have unrestricted free agents in Joe Harris, Wilson Chandler, Tyler Johnson, and Henry Ellenson. And their restricted free agents are Chris Chioza, Timothy Luau-Charbonneau, and Jeremy Martin. Nets owner Joe Tsai can afford to pay the luxury tax, but will he want to? Without a track record, that is a question that defines Brooklyn's offseason. The Charlotte Hornets. They have unrestricted free agents in Bismack Biyombo, Willie Hernangómez, and Dwayne Bacon. And their restricted free agents are Robert Franks, Kobe Simmons, and Ray Spalding. Batum is almost certainly coming back, but even so, the Hornets can get to a max cap space pretty easily. They won't need to. Star free agents tend not to go to Charlotte, and this class doesn't have much to offer. The Chicago Bulls. They don't have any unrestricted free agents, but they have restricted free agents in Chris Dunn, Denzel Valentine, Shaquille Harrison, and Adam McCullough. With Porter probably picking up that option, the Bulls will be pressed up against the cap line. That's not the worst place for them to be in a year like this, though. The Cleveland Cavaliers have unrestricted free agents in Tristan Thompson, Matthew Dellavedova, and Ante Zizek. And restricted free agents are Alphonso McKinney, Tyler Cook, Matt Mooney, and Levi Randolph. Cleveland traded its cap space for Andre Drummond at the trade deadline and will now likely operate as an above-the-cap team. That gives the Cavs the flexibility to retain Thompson using bird rights. That's all the time we have for today's episode on Go Sports Crazy with your host, DJ Takeoff, only on Penguin Radio. We'll be back for more next week on talk of NBA, NFL, WNBA, and much more. Can't wait for more. Hope you have a good night. Thank you.